America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that there is a battle going on involving police and protesters and thrown rocks and mayhem. Where? Not in the United States, but actually in Malmo in Sweden. This is the site of the Eurovision contest, which is always a big deal. Why is there so much fighting going on there? It's over the idea that there is one Israeli singer who is participating in Eurovision. Her name is Aidan Golan, and today was ordered to stay in her hotel room by Israel's own national security agency, which are providing some protection for her, as thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters demonstrated in Malmo, Sweden, calling her for her to be excluded from the competition. Among them, Greta Thunberg, not in Malmo, but elsewhere in Sweden. Greta Thunberg, the Nobel Prize-nominated environmental activist, I guess you could call her. But she joined thousands of protesters in the southern Swedish city, demonstrating against Israel having a competitor in the famous song contest. This honestly is unbelievable, and it is nightmarish. The idea that Israel becomes such a pariah that it can't participate in Eurovision. I mean, the funniest thing about Eurovision that I can think of is that Will Ferrell movie they made satirizing it. But honestly, the idea that somehow because the government of Israel is conducting a war to defend Israel's own citizens from murder and invasion and torture and kidnapping, the idea that because of that, you are now a pariah nation. And what this indicates, of course, is unequivocally, the fact that there are remnants, at least, of anti-Semitism, of Jew hatred, of a Jew should be treated from any other people in the world. Right now, with literally, they say 360,000 people in Haiti have been dislocated from their homes because of gang activity. They talk about people dying in Congo, maybe as many as 10 million. There were 800,000 Tutsi populations, who were killed by the Hutu regime in Rwanda. That was years ago. And in Syria, right near Israel, there have been 750,000 by a factor of 20, more than 20 times the number of Arabs killed in the Syrian civil war, which, thank God, does not involve Israel at all. In fact, I actually personally have visited an Israeli hospital near the Syrian border where they have rescued victims of some of the genocidal killing going on in Syria. The result of that is there was a Palestinian living in Syria who got in trouble because his son had been rescued by this Israeli program to help people who were gravely injured and couldn't get medical care otherwise. They're taken to hospitals in Israel and then returned. In any event, there was a Palestinian householder whose son had been rescued, and then he got in trouble with his neighbors because he started in Syria flying an Israeli flag. just as a sign of gratitude. And all of this is just bizarre. Greta Thunberg, who is 21, was at the Stop Israel demonstration in the center of Malmo, Sweden. And she was there today ahead of the young Israeli-Russian singer's performance at the second semifinal in the competition later this evening. I'm thinking this is probably going to hurt the chances of Eden Golan to win the Eurovision contest. Israel has won Eurovision in the past, and of course, because Israel is a small country, it's only 10 million people. And with all of that, they make a very, very big deal. When they won the basketball championship, I think it was Maccabiah Tel Aviv, won the basketball championship in Europe. And that was a huge day. They came out, they had hundreds of thousands of people who came out with a victory parade. Meanwhile, the Stormy Daniel trial goes on. President Biden goes on creating a storm of controversy. He warned Israel back in November that he would not supply weapons to have been his quote historically used to deal with Rafah. That's something he's told CNN while campaigning in Wisconsin for re-election in November. Oh, it's not that he did it in November. This is more recent. He just did it. They're talking about just badly written sentence. Biden told CNN while campaigning in Wisconsin for re-election in November. Biden told CNN while campaigning in Wisconsin for re-election in November. Earlier in the day, that's today, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told the Senate Appropriations Committee the U.S. has already paused one shipment to Israel of payload munitions due to concerns over Rafah. The Israelis acknowledge that they have successfully killed 30 Hamas terrorists, combatants, so far in Rafah. Oh, gosh. Here on my screen, all of a sudden, a photograph of Greta Thunberg standing right next to a Palestinian flag with Free Palestine written on it. I suspect, though you can't really see the end of the word, that Palestine this time is spelled right. And Greta Thunberg is wrapped in a keffiyeh. The idea that climate activists would hold up support for Hamas as something that makes particular sense. None of it makes sense, nor does the story of Robert Kennedy. It is one of the most remarkable headlines I've ever seen in the New York Times. You would think you were reading The Mirror or something like that. And the headline in the New York Times today, it's a top of a page headline, too. There's a picture of Robert Kennedy Jr., and the headline above him says, Kennedy says doctors found a dead worm in his brain. Not a joke. A very serious matter, and apparently a serious condition. The New York Times points out that there were 2,000 hospitalizations in America last year for a similar condition, for some kind of worm infestation of the brain. Now, it's not the kind of thing you want to admit as a candidate, but he still is demanding, Robert Kennedy Jr., that he wants to debate, and he wants to not wait for Joe Biden to agree to a debate. He's eager to debate Trump because he says he is appealing to the same people who otherwise would support Trump. There is much more. There is Eugene Kontorovich, who's a law professor at George Mason University, about the UN vote to include Palestine as a nation, even though that nation doesn't exist. We'll also be speaking later to former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper on what's going on the ground in Gaza. That and more on The Medved Show. Mm-hmm. And on the Michael Medved show, before we get to the worm in the brain issue regarding Robert Kennedy Jr., and again, he's been very forthcoming about this. It's part of his medical record. And apparently there really was a brain infestation, plus a problem Mr. Kennedy has acknowledged about mercury poisoning from eating too much fish. And it's particular kinds of fish that apparently have the mercury poisoning that helped to cause some of his medical problems that are discussed in great detail today in the New York Times. Speaking of great detail in the New York Times, the latest on the ongoing Stormy Daniels testimony, she has concluded her testimony. It's a total of 7 hours on the stand she spent. It was 7 hours, says the New York Times, of searing testimony spread over 2 days. Stormy recounted under oath a one-night sexual encounter. They say that because they're the New York Times instead of saying one-night stand, that she said she had had with Donald J. Trump. Described taking a $130,000 payment in return for her silence, and swung between defiance and vulnerability in the face of combative questions from President Trump's lawyers. A lawyer from Mr. Trump asked her, "You made all this up, right?" To which Ms. Daniels responded with a forceful no. And when the lawyer suggested that Ms. Daniels, a porn star, had experience with, quote, phony stories about sex, she responded that the sex in such films is, quote, very much real, just like what happened to me in that room. And a number of people have pointed out that basically the decision to make a focus of what happened with Stormy Daniels, the details of her sexual encounter with Donald Trump, and the follow-up to that, because they had many contacts after that time, though apparently none of them particularly sensual or carnal in nature. The question here is, it really doesn't go to the essence of the trial, which is about filing false records and cheating, basically, breaking the law to win a presidential campaign. And because all of this happened about 10 years after the alleged sexual encounter with President Trump, and it had to do with whether it would be published and would become an issue after the Access Hollywood revelations, that in October, before the November election in 2016. Here's what to know, says the New York Times. Key testimony, Ms. Daniels was oftentimes defiant during her testimony, including when the defense attacked her for hawking merchandise to supporters. She responded by likening it to Mr. Trump's own merchandising. But at other times, Ms. Daniels was seemingly on the verge of tears. Asked by a prosecutor, Susan Hoffinger, that means somebody on her side, one of the team that has brought her to the stand, asked by a prosecutor named Susan Hoffinger about the effect these events had on her life, Ms. Daniels said that she had to hire security, move several times, and take extra precautions because of her daughter. Asked if publicly telling the truth had been a net positive or a net negative for her, she responded negative. Now, the point of all this, that came up in redirect when the prosecution has a chance to ask her more questions after the cross-examination by the defense being the lawyers for President Trump, of course. And one of the things that the Trump team has tried to suggest is that this whole thing was made up, and that it was basically made up so that she could make money, so that she could actually exploit her intimacy, brief though it was, with Donald Trump to get ahead. And that's why they put the question to her, was the publicity about telling the truth, a positive or a negative, why she responded forcefully, negative. Her credibility was attacked. The lawyer for Mr. Trump, Susan Netchlis, spent more than 2 hours today attempting to undermine Ms. Daniels' credibility, including her reasons for accepting the hush money payment from Mr. Trump's one-time fixer, Michael D. Cohen. The lawyer accused Ms. Daniels of being motivated by greed, which Ms. Daniels denied, although she acknowledged accepting Mr. Cohen's offer because she was running out of time, an apparent reference to the looming election. In other words, she recognized that her revelations, whatever they happened to be, about having some kind of contact with Donald Trump would be more significant in impacting the election of 2016 than just inspiring people's curiosity or spying eyes after the election took place. The payment is central to the case. The 34 felony counts of falsifying business records against Mr. Trump stem from his repayment to Mr. Cohen after he became president, and the recording of the checks as, quote, legal expenses at the Trump Organization. They weren't legal expenses. They didn't go to any lawyers. The expenses were a bribe to Stormy Daniels. Now, it wasn't illegal for Stormy Daniels to take that money or for Michael Cohen to pay that money, because you can have such a thing as a non-disclosure agreement, and you can have negotiations about it. But what you can't do is then turn around and report that money as legal fees on the record, because that wasn't true. They weren't legal expenses. The payment is central to the case. The 34 felony counts of falsifying business records against Mr. Trump stem from his repayment of Cohen after he became president, and the recording of the checks as legal expenses at the Trump Organization. Mr. Trump, who is 77, has denied any wrongdoing. If convicted, he could face prison or probation. The experts say that the maximum prison term that he could receive would be about 4 years, which if he would just about eat up his time as president of the United States if he was sentenced that way, because there's no way he can pardon himself. This is not a federal case. It is a New York State case. The witnesses who followed Ms. Daniels, Rebecca, that's the witness singular, her name is Rebecca Minocchio. She is a junior bookkeeper at Mr. Trump's company. She described how during his presidency she would mail him checks that needed his signature. She described working for Jeffrey S. McConney, a Trump Organization corporate controller, who testified previously. Meanwhile, back in the world of war and peace and international diplomacy, what will happen if Palestine, which doesn't exist yet, is admitted to the UN? We'll be talking. And on the Michael Medved Show, Professor of Law Eugene Kontorovich is one of the world's preeminent experts on universal jurisdiction, maritime piracy, as well as international law and the Israel-Arab conflict. He is also the executive director of Scalia Law School's Center for Middle East and International Law at George Mason University in Virginia. Professor Kontorovich, thank you for joining us. And you write a provocative what if concerning the United Nations and its current fascination with the idea of voting in the General Assembly to admit Palestine as a nation, even though there is no such functioning nation in the world today. First of all, Could the General Assembly do that? Because there's no veto in the General Assembly. Presumably, the United States would veto the admission of Palestine if it came before the Security Council, right?
So the United States did veto the membership of Palestine just a couple weeks ago and has done so numerous times. Now, the UN Charter is very clear. Only the Security Council can admit states into the United Nations. But what the Palestinians are doing is a kind of a backdoor trick where the General Assembly is going to vote to give them all of the privileges that member states have without the technical designation member state. And by doing that, they hope to, first of all, avoid the Security Council. And this is clearly against the spirit of the UN Charter. But they're also trying to get around a U.S. law. In 1990, Congress passed a law because they understood that the Palestinians are always going to try to seek to try to get around negotiations with Israel, where they might have to make concessions like abandoning terrorism, and try to get their statehood legitimated through the United Nations, where they have an automatic majority amongst undemocratic regimes. So Congress passed a law saying that if the United Nations gives the Palestinian entity, either membership or the same standing as a member state, all U.S. money to the U.N. gets cut off. Now, the Palestinians are hoping that through this kind of weirdly worded back door where they get the privileges without the name, they can avoid that. And the only reason they would think that is because if the Biden administration has given them a green light. Because based on this action that the General Assembly is anticipated to vote on Friday, President Biden would be entitled, and I would argue required, to stop all funding to the United Nations. So if they're going to vote yes on this, it's because he's told them he's not going to do that.
And you make the point that another president, particularly a president named Trump, could respond to the conferring of privileges and immunities and et cetera to Palestine as a as yet non-existent nation, that President Trump could respond to that by trying to block all American funding for the United Nations. How much money is that per year that we send to the UN?
A shocking $18 billion of taxpayer money. About one-third of the UN's budget, more than any other country. And the United Nations has become a cesspool of dictatorship apologetics, where Saudi Arabia heads the Women's Rights Council, China talks about human rights, and the Palestinians get rewarded for the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust by getting a status upgrade. Under U.S. law, that money should not be going to the UN if this vote passes. And if Biden chooses not to enforce that law, President Trump will be able, on day one of his administration, without any further legislation, to say no more money to the UN. It's not even a decision that he would have to say he's making. It's a decision that the United Nations will make on Friday. If they vote for this upgrade, it would trigger an automatic requirement of defunding. Now, President Biden might not, you know, feel compelled to go along with U.S. law, right? Like Congress voted to appropriate military aid to Israel, but he's not sending it. So at the same time, Congress has voted not to allow funding of the U.N. under these circumstances, but he will send it. But that gives President Trump a real opportunity and a real silver lining to finally take down this farce of an international institution called the United Nations.
Okay, for the people in the UN and in the UN General Assembly who are overwhelmingly in favor of this kind of conferring of new privileges on Palestine, what is it in the behavior of the Hamas leadership of Gaza, or, for that matter, the Palestinian Authority, what is it recently that they argue deserves special recognition and reward? What have they done that is positive in the view of the UN?
They don't relate to anything positive that they have done. They said they just deserve it. So they don't mention anything specific, but we must think that, you know, that the UN believes the Palestinians can earn their statehood by massacring Jews. And it's a pure reward for terror. It's a pure reward for terror. As always, the UN blinds itself to everything bad that the Palestinians do and just heaps endless condemnations on Israel. It's a reward for terror, nothing less.
What would your advice be? Do you think it is appropriate for President Trump to make this into a campaign issue? He this morning, before his trial began, the new installment of the hush money trial and the Stormy Daniels testimony, President Trump made some comments, which we'll play later, that indicated very strong disagreement with President Biden's pause in delivering weapons that are intended for Israel. Could this be an effective campaign issue for Trump?
So I don't know that defunding the United Nations has to by itself be a campaign issue, but certainly the Obama administration's across-the-board betrayal of Israel and its other allies, of which this is just a part. And again, this is not a isolationist betrayal. The Biden administration is picking a terror group, a U.S.-recognized terror group, to protect over its major non-NATO ally, Israel. And I think that's a massive issue. I think Americans get it. I think Americans understand that Biden is preventing Israel from winning this most just war. At the same time, you know, the economy is not doing great. And I think people would understand that saving $18 billion that goes to no apparent good use at the bloated, corrupt, bureaucratic, and anti-Western United Nations could be a blessing. I think President Trump should clearly say that if the United Nations chooses to go in the face of a U.S. law and approve this vote on Friday, they are putting their fate in their own hands. They are betting the farm for the Hamas terror group.
Wouldn't it be a problem if the United Nations continues without the United States, that then the Security Council could pass all kinds of abominations without any threat of U.S. veto, things that would be disastrous for Israel and our other allies as well? Isn't that something to be concerned about?
If it were not for American participation and involvement in the United Nations, the United Nations would lose any stature or seriousness it has. What makes the United Nations effective is that the United States participates. Without the United States, it would just be a dictator's talking club with no particular power or moral suasion.
A dictator's talking club. There's a new potential retitling of the UN. Eugene Kantarovich, provocative, important, and extremely alarming. We'll post his column at our website at michaelmedved.com, and we'll be right back with what President Trump said this morning before his trial and the questioning resumed. We'll be right back. And on the Michael Medved show today, to follow up on a story we spoke about a little bit earlier, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who has more than his hands full, took time off from trying to direct the conclusion of a successful war effort against the terrorist group Hamas by wishing Israel's Eurovision contestant, Aidan Golan, luck in her upcoming performance. This was a video that was released today. In a statement, Prime Minister Netanyahu said, "Aidan, I want to wish you success, but you have already succeeded. You not only face Eurovision in a proud and impressive way, but you successfully face a wave of anti-Semitism while standing and representing the state of Israel with respect. There was this morning concerning the Biden policy, the so-called pause in essential weapons that Israel had been committed to receive, had been prepared to receive, and the United States was committed to provide them. That all is paused because the president says he cannot be sure that Israel will abide by the rules of war that he wants them to follow as they go into Rafah and go after the last two Hamas battalions. It's actually the last four Hamas battalions that are still surviving and operating in Gaza. The statement made by President Trump outside the courtroom this morning gives a political dimension to this that could end up being very important. Listen.
Thank you very much. What Biden is doing with respect to Israel is disgraceful. If any Jewish person voted for Joe Biden, they should be ashamed of themselves. He's totally abandoned Israel, and nobody can believe it. I guess he feels good about it because he did it as a political decision. You have to do the right decision, not the political decision, but he did a very bad thing. I just want to let you know that we've just...
Okay, it's clearly President Trump speaking out very clearly about his disagreement with President Biden's decision. By the way, even as a political move, it's idiotic. It's going to hurt Biden profoundly, and should. And it's not going to help him at all. If he thinks going after those 200,000 Arab American votes in Michigan, that now because he has paused the delivery of arms to Israel because of Rafah, that all of a sudden those 200,000 Arab American voters in Michigan are going to turn around and go overwhelmingly for Biden as they did in 2020, it's naive. It's ridiculous. He is still going to be Genocide Joe, as they like to call him, by the people who are demonstrating in behalf of Hamas everywhere, people like Greta Thunberg in Sweden, people at Columbia or UCLA or MIT or Harvard, any of those universities where they have ongoing turmoil. You think that they will be placated and say, oh, yeah, now Joe Biden's on our side. We're going for him. No. But what it will do will be take the Jewish community, which has been traditionally solidly democratic, with very few exceptions in recent years. The top vote total for a Democratic candidate really came in 1980. For President Reagan, and partially because he was running as Jimmy Carter. And also there were third-party candidates like John Anderson, who got a bunch of Jewish votes. And Reagan got almost 40%. But no one's done better than that. Even presidents who have heroically, actually, worked to defend Israel. Well, Richard Nixon did, but that was after the election of 1972, where he lost to George McGovern, who was another outspoken critic of Israel. So the idea that this is going to somehow win him votes on either side of the conflict, I think is ridiculous. There's a very fine editorial on the Wall Street Journal today. It begins, call it what it is, a U.S. arms embargo against Israel. That's the astonishing story this week as the Biden administration confirms it is blocking the delivery of weapons to its main ally in the Middle East. The administration would like to focus on the denial of 2,000-pound bombs, which it says are too destructive. Never mind that a professional force can employ them in a manner that restricts the radius of damage. Mr. Biden is also halting a shipment of 500-pound bombs and holding up joint direct attack munitions, which convert unguided bombs into precision smart bombs. Politico reports that small diameter bombs are being withheld. The Journal adds that a Biden administration has been sitting on a deal that includes tank shields, tank shells, and mortar rounds. The message from the White House, in other words, is that Israel shouldn't have large bombs or small bombs, dumb bombs or smart bombs, and let it do without tanks and artillery, too. Now isn't a good time to send the weapons, you see, because Israel could use them. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and other U.S. officials explained that the goal of the embargo, which they present as a pause or review, is to prevent a wider Israeli attack on the Hamas stronghold of Rafah. This is the terrorist reward for using civilians as human shields. No matter how fiercely the president trumpets his ironclad support for Israel, his denial of weapons now puts the Jewish state in danger. Israel is at war, assaulted on multiple fronts. Denying it U.S. arms is an invitation to its enemies to take advantage in hostage talks and on the battlefield. They conclude their editorial this way. And these are points that I wish and I hope that people in the Biden administration and in the Democratic Party will pay some attention to, because this is a horrible betrayal. Israel needs to be ready now, writes the Wall Street Journal, and its enemies need to know the U.S. stands behind it. And that's why Congress approved military aid to Israel in April. 79-18 was the vote in the Senate, and 365-58 was the vote in the House. The overwhelming votes, including a majority of both political parties, marked an important defeat for the anti-Israel left. Failing in its efforts to disarm Israel, the left lost. Now Mr. Biden is endorsing its policy. We will speak about this coming up with Mark Esper, who was the 27th Secretary of Defense, the 23rd Secretary of the Army. He's the author of a book called A Sacred Oath, Memoirs of a Secretary of Defense During Extraordinary Times. The Hamas demands, which they have just issued for releasing hostages and moving forward with negotiations, are outrageous. And I believe that Secretary Esper will be able to tell us why. There's also all kinds of insanity on the home front, including a case in North Carolina where a young man in high school was suspended for using the term illegal aliens. He didn't even use the term in an insulting manner or to put anyone down. He used it in a discussion of what the term alien really meant and how it should be defined. There is also an attempt to try to wreak some consequences for some of the excesses at Columbia University. 13 federal judges, 13. Have said they will not consider applications from Columbia University or Columbia University Law School for clerkships, which are very coveted for federal judges. That and more, all coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.